5 a.m., I'm up with a crisp Celsius energy drink. Running 12 miles today. Grab a green juice, quick change, and head to work. Meetings, workshops, one more Celsius, no slowing down. Working late, but obviously still meeting the girls for a little dancing. Celsius, live, fit, go. Grab a cold, refreshing Celsius at your local retailer or locate now at Celsius.com.
Welcome you back. Yes, it is another edition of Inside Boxing Live. It is powered by PPV.com every single week. It is Dan Canobio and it is Chris Algieri off of a really busy fight weekend across 2 days. Friday night with the top ranked fights, Saturday night with the zone fights. Chris, you had a pro box show. I'm heading out to Dallas, Texas for Mike Tyson. It's a Mike Tyson fight week versus Jake Paul. What is going on in this crazy world of boxing? Let's break it all down. How are you?
I'm good. Rocking my old throwback Spike TV, Spike Studios.
Wow.
Hoodie. Spike, this is a real throwback, guys.
They were in line with PBC for a while. Chris is wearing a Spike Sports sweatshirt. I remember that. You fought Amir Khan on Spike Sports.
That's right. They did a nice little like pre-show. They brought their guys down with the cameras and the production crew, and it was nice. It was good working with them, actually. It was a fun network to work with.
How was this weekend? Where were you?
We were in Kissimmee, Orlando, Florida for Pro Box TV. We had a really big card. Ton of good fights. Like 9 fights in total, and like, it's rare you see a 9-fight card where 8 of them are like legit good fights and good matchups. But that's
Jojo Diaz on that card?
He lost. He lost Abraham Montoya, which is
can we just enough for Jojo Diaz?
I know. I thought I had him winning, but it was a close fight. But yeah, that's not a good look to lose.
Google
to a
him and see some of the legal issues that he's in. I'm not trying to.
Well, he's clean myself. And sober now. He's sober now, so that was the issue.
He did his
rehabilitation at White Sands Drug and Alcohol Rehab Center, which is owned by Gary Jonas, who owns Pro Box TV. So
it
was like
related.
On site. You know, like he got the literally was you know at the center and then would go to train at the gym right next door, like on the same property. It worked out, but unfortunately, he didn't get the win. So
yeah, I saw they were like this big boxing scene was rolling out a big story about him, how he's you know his rehab and all this. I'm just like, all right, this guy do some pretty heinous things, but whatever. Let's move on. Let's get into the boxing news. There's a lot. Let's get right into it because there's a lot to dissect and break down from what was a really busy weekend. Like a lot of big fights with big names that are going to have ramifications down the line. We'll start with Friday night and Keyshawn Davis. We'll start with Friday or Thursday morning with Keyshawn Davis and Gustavo Limos. Gustavo Limos comes in at 6.5 pounds overweight, which crazy. Isn't your 0.5, but isn't your 1 pound over, your 1.5 pound over, which gets the ire of boxing world and boxing fans when you come in 0.5, 1 pound, 1.5 pounds over. That's like one of the worst things you could possibly do. 6.5 pounds over. That's a clear, calculated move. Something that we've been seeing in boxing over the course of the last couple of months, and even longer, but in the last couple of months between Ryan Garcia, Jesus Saracho on Saturday night's card against Ernesto Mercado, blew through the weight. I don't know if that was on purpose, but it seemed like Limos came in overweight to get an edge. You know, this is a guy that was fighting at 140 at some point, 138. He's missed weight before. He knew that Top Rank wasn't going to cancel this show. He had some leverage, which I think makes it even more despicable because it was in Keyshawn Davis's backyard and there was a lot of fans coming and they weren't just going to, you know, close down the whole show. So obviously it backfired because he lost, but I was disgusted by this. I hate this trend. I hope that there's something we could do more than just take them. I think he lost $100,000 or even more. I think that's not enough because that was a calculated move by Limos.
Yeah, I mean, luckily everything worked out and that, you know, he still lost and got really blown out. But we were talking about this prior to it. Like, this is crazy. It's a really bad sign, a bad precedent to set that these guys are willing to do this. The fight goes on and they still get paid and get to work. You know, blowing it by 6 pounds, dude. Like, that's, you know, the fight was going to happen. You were just looking for an extra advantage. Because he didn't look like he really even tried to make weight. He didn't look like he was like all sucked out or anything. Like, and he's not a big guy. He's not even a big 35 pounder. So kind of weird situation, but listen, it all worked out. the boxing gods shined upon us for that one.
There's a saying in basketball, ball don't lie. If it's like karma, ball don't lie in this situation because he got blasted.
Keyshawn's skills don't lie, apparently.
Exactly. That kid, we'll get to that in a second. That kid is a guy now. He's not a kid. That's mm-hmm. that's a grown man. But he comes in at 155 on fight night, which is interesting too, because Keyshawn Davis fought a junior middleweight on Friday night, and Lemos, there's a lot of discussion about the weight issues. There's a lot of discussion about weight bullying. There's a lot of discussion about rehydration. I think a lot of it came into the forefront with the Tank and Ryan fight, which was a mainstream fight, which was a fight that brought in casual fans, where a world famous rehydration clause that you have Ryan Garcia talking about all fight week long. And that just like kind of brought it up into the eyes of casual fans. But, you know, a lot of hardcore fans don't really understand rehydration and what that all means. But 155 for Lemos on fight night is kind of crazy. Where do you stand on this? Because you're the fighter on this panel. Like, what is the proper weight to gain from weigh in to fight night?
Should be about 10% of the weight class. So if you know, should be under 10% of the weight class, and you should always kind of hang around that anyway. So if it's 140, yeah, you got like 10 to 14 pounds. You're going to see guys, but like that means you should be being camp around 55, you should get under 150. But on fight night, anything more than once you go beyond 10%, then you're looking at, you know, like him 155, but really it was a 135 fight. So that's 20 pounds.
I'm terrible at math. That's more than 10%, right?
That's more than 10%. Yeah. So, because he went, if you really think about it, he never made 135, but that was a 135 pound weight class.
Okay. Let's just say like Devin Haney comes in at 140, Chris. Devin Haney comes in at 140.
Plus 14 pounds would be the max.
Plus 14?
Should be the max. 54 should be your absolute max.
Because I've seen this all the time. Like, guys are like, oh my God, what's up? You know, Lemos came in at 155. I don't hear you crying about Devin Haney or David Benavidez coming in 25 pounds over. I was like, guys, like, rehydrating to that level doesn't equal success.
Right. It doesn't. And that's what I'm saying. Like after over 10%, it's not helpful anymore. Then you're really putting on too much weight. You're not the same body. And you're not going to fight that well. And we see that. And that's why people are like, oh, they should put rehydration clauses on everybody. Nobody should be getting like, nah, I don't think so. Cause I think at the highest level, it's not about weight bullying. It's about skills. And we saw that on Saturday night, Friday night, rather.
So it's up to you really as a fighter and your team to figure out what you want to rehydrate to. So, I mean, you have done this before. I mean, mm-hmm. this is your wheelhouse. You're very educated on this. You know, 15 plus pounds around there should be the weight. But going back to the this act of blowing the weight and for an advantage, I'm just so it pissed me off so much because I was really looking forward to this fight, and I thought that Lemos, coming off of a loss, but he was really tough, really game. You know, took Hitchens. I don't know what you think of Hitchens. I think that Hitchens win doesn't look so good now. Keyshawn did. But it was in at the time, it was a good win or a good performance from Lemos. And this is a tough guy for Davis to fight. This is a real measuring stick for Davis. Then I hear about the 6 pounds and I'm like, what the heck is this fight now? Like, this is just save face type of fight. They're talking about, you know, potentially getting a replacement. But I think there needs to be stiffer penalties. Like in Japan, if you blow weight by that much, you're banned. Like you're done. I don't know if ban for life is ever going to work in the U.S. Like they don't even ban drug users. Maybe like I saw someone float out there like you're down a point in the ring. If you're going to come in overweight as an advantage.
You can't do that because really you're looking to get an advantage anyway. And you're looking to knock it out. So when we think of it historically, you think of Jose Luis Castillo in the rematch with Corrales. You know, the first fight was a fight of the year, back and forth, crazy, crazy good fight. Rematch comes in, Castillo blows the weight by like, I think, 3-ish pounds or whatever. He goes in there, knocks Cross out in 2 rounds. So if you could have given him 10 points, it didn't matter. Like he's still going in there to knock you out.
There's just something so wrong about one guy making the weight and going through the hell.
Struggling,
suffering.
We all struggle to make weight.
Those final 4 pounds, 3 pounds are the hardest. And
bro, that final pound really sucks it out of you.
I can't even imagine, bro. And Gustavo Lemos is sitting there with his feet up, eating some pasta, watching Netflix, laughing. while Keyshawn is in a freaking sauna spitting into a cup.
Yep.
And that's in his mind, $100,000. No one thinks I'm going to win anyway. If I win, I'll get bigger fights. I don't like what it's setting. I don't like this. Like you said, the precedent it sets is horrific. And Ryan Garcia really brought it to the light when he did it on a way bigger stage. And that was an advantage for him. And 100% advantage for him. Obviously, it didn't work out for Lemos. But is this going to stop B-side fighters of like Gustavo Lemos's ilk from doing this in the future?
Well, I know Bob Arum, and this was a top-ranked show. He takes this stuff personally. He's an old-school guy. You got to make weight. So chances are they're probably not going to bring Lemos back anytime soon. And if they are, the price is going to be he's going to suffer, which he would have anyway. He just got blown out in two rounds by a guy, who's not known as a puncher. So, but yeah, I agree. I think there should be some longstanding ramifications after the fight. Maybe find your next fight too. You know, if you fight under the same banner, and they find you again. I don't know. It's just it's an ugly mar on the sport for sure.
Because you don't know. He never said I did it for an advantage. Like, he didn't say that. So you can't. How do you prove that? Number one, because you can't prove it. And so then you're. It's a gray area, and you're kind of assuming.
I mean, by the way he performed, maybe he just didn't train. It's because he's normally a very quality guy, and he's very durable, and he throws a lot of punches, and he's a nightmare. He gave Hitchinson hell for 12 rounds when they fought last year, and I don't know. Maybe. He just didn't prepare for this fight. Was not in the right mind space to train properly. Because when you look at that performance, it didn't look like he was going there for advantage. It was terrible. Like he had no punch resistance. He didn't do anything in the fight and got blown out.
Yeah, out of there in two rounds. Talk about the fight now. Awesome scenes in Virginia. Oh my God! Like 10,000 really charged up fans. There's nothing like a hometown fight in sports. Like no other sport can create that stage, because it's one person, everyone rallying around them. It's not a team sport. So it's a very unique setting. And what we saw in Norfolk, Virginia, with all the Davis brothers, their sisters singing the national anthem, it was pretty awesome. They get to the fight, and Keyshawn just blows Lemos out of there. You know, these stab jabs to the body, precise punch. It just looks so poised for a 25-year-old. I thought that on Friday night, Keyshawn Davis was a coming out party. It's really cool to watch a fighter take that leap from, prospect to contender, make that leap into the forefront where we're now going to be discussing him and not going to be watching. It reminded me of like Teofimo Lopez when he came on the scene and he had some big wins early on, knockouts. And then all of a sudden, you become a player. All of a sudden, you're we're talking about you. The boxing scene's writing about you. Fight Hub is talking about, like, you know what I mean? Like, Keyshawn Davis became a character in the sport and a main character in the sport on Friday night. What a performance.
I mean, this was supposed to be a test, and he passes it with flying colors, blows out this guy who's supposed to push him, who's supposed to expose him. And Keyshawn, I mean, goes out there and looked as good as he's ever looked against the toughest opponent he's ever been in with. You mentioned Teofimo, and I think his breaking out party was – the coming out party was Richard Comey, big second round knockout, straight right hand. You know,
well, that was a title
shot.
Win too.
Yeah, I thought to say that too. But that was when everybody was like, "Yo, this guy is not just now a world champion; he is a pound for pound force." And I guess the Magdaleno fight too for Teofimo, that was a little more similar to this fight, because he looked phenomenal in that fight. Blows him out, former world champion too. So. Yeah, it's cool to see the coronation of this young man, especially doing it at home. What's better than that?
I mean, it came through in all aspects, because you've talked to fighters numerous times when they fight in their hometown. I talked to these guys that are fighting on club shows, and they're like, "Oh, it's a lot of pressure." You've done it, Chris. It's a lot of pressure. But when you come through, I mean, you can't feel any cooler. Like he looked like he could have levitated out of that ring afterwards. He was so charged up with his entire family behind him. It's such a cool scene. And just going back to the fight, like the thing with Keyshawn and with the weight and everything, with Lemos especially, well, we heard this about Keyshawn before the Lemos fight, was like, oh, he doesn't have that game-changing power. you know, he's a very good boxer. He's a silver medalist at the Olympics. But what is he really about? Does he have that power? Is he going to go up to 140 one day? And will that power translate? Can it keep some of these 135 guys off of him? And I think that question was answered because, yeah, Lemos did put a damper on this whole event. He put a dark cloud over it when he came in overweight, and it kind of was like, all right, how do we gauge this win? But I'll tell you what, Keyshawn Davis stopped a 155-pounder in there. It was, you know, bad game plan, skills or not. I think we can now say that Keyshawn Davis does have that power in there. He might not be known as a power puncher, and he may not do that, you know, for the rest of his career, but he does have it in him. Would you agree?
Yeah. I mean, that's one of the big questions that was answered on Friday night with Keyshawn. That was really the only question about Keyshawn, because obviously his skills, you see his amateur pedigree, you see what he's able to do with the pros. Next, the question is going to be his chin. That's all that's really left. You know, obviously he can punch. He's knocking out world-class guys. You know, and we've seen good physicality from him prior to this, but the next one is that chin. Let's see if he's got the beard to go with the, you know, that punch.
All right, so he gets the win, and he does it in grand fashion, and that's the type of win that will accelerate your development. That's the type of win that will accelerate your expectations. I'm one of those guys that always looks for what's next, and immediately after the fight, my brain starts working. Immediately after the fight, Keyshawn Davis mentions Gervonta Davis's name. Davis on Davis action here. I got another Davis in the mix. Knock, knock, he says. And then he goes even further. On Sunday night, puts out an Instagram Live where he is just trashing Gervonta Davis. His resume is weak. He's a prospect. Just going full court press for that Gervonta Davis fight. I don't know if Keyshawn Davis will get that Gervonta Davis fight in the next calendar year, but I will say this. Keyshawn Davis is definitely on the radar of Gervonta Davis, and that's a very good thing for boxing. Gervonta Davis is the king at lightweight. He is the king. So therefore, he needs dance partners. He's like 30 years old. Like, we should be excited. If you're a Gervonta Davis fan, you should be excited that Keyshawn Davis is emerging. If you're a boxing fan, you should be ecstatic that Gervonta Davis has some dance partners, and Keyshawn Davis being one of them, who is really good, who is very marketable, and could eventually square off with Gervonta.
I love it. I love the trash talking. I love the fact that he's going right to it. That Keyshawn is going right after the top dog in the weight class. That's what you're supposed to do, man. You're on top of the world, like you said. Like when you're that level of fighter and you believe in yourself that much and you have this momentum, you think you can beat everybody in the world, and that's the way you should carry yourself. I remember feeling like this. I remember being that guy, being like, I don't care who I fight. I'm going to be world champion. I'm beating everybody because I'm that good. Keyshawn's at that stage, and he's going for the top, man. I love it. Swing for the fences, baby. Next year. I'm not saying that fight can't happen.
I put out a tweet and it got a ton of traction. I was like, guys, is Keyshawn Davis better than Frank Martin, Chris?
After Friday, I believe so, yes.
Okay. And Frank Martin got a shot at Gervonta Davis. We know in boxing, if you listen to this podcast and if you watch long enough, meritocracy doesn't exist. Frank Martin... Right. Did not get that shot at Gervonta Davis because he was next up. He got that shot because it was a business. You know, they're both with PBC. It was an easy fight to make. But then it's up to us to kind of gauge the opponent for Gervonta and his skills. I think Keyshawn Davis is a better all-around fighter than Frank Martin. We're talking about a silver medalist. Just got better skills. Frank Martin is still really good. Frank Martin
Very
is still
good.
Top 10-ish. Top 15.
I actually liked that fight, the Davis fight.
Love that fight. Not
the fact that it was a good fight, but like the fact that that fight was being made. I thought he was a viable contender to fight Davis. I thought it was a good fight.
Absolutely. Maybe. Point I'm getting at is, why are you telling me? Why are there fans responding to that tweet saying you're out of your mind? Keyshawn Davis doesn't belong anywhere near Gervonta Davis. Gervonta Davis would wipe him out, keep him far away. Keyshawn Davis isn't nearly as good as Frank Martin. Your recency bias. He just beat a guy coming off of a loss. He just beat a guy that didn't train. Like, what, can't we just like look at this situation and say, oh, this is fun? Use your eyes. Like, Keyshawn Davis versus Gervonta Davis. I'm not saying it's next. I'm not saying that a win over Gustavo Lemos gives you a shot at Gervonta Davis. But it's not that crazy to think about in a year, 18 months.
I'd like to see Keyshawn fight Frank Martin. I think that would be a good logical next step. And then if Keyshawn gets past Martin, now is he viable? Now is he worthy of fighting Davis? To you guys, I would think that would really put his mark down. Like, yeah, I am that dude.
I wish boxing worked like that, because that would be an awesome matchup. That would be like,
it makes too much sense, Dan. It's too rational. So obviously that won't happen.
But imagine like the storylines for that. Like that fight would be
great.
That fight would be awesome.
I think it would be an interesting fight too. Frank's physical, man. He's tough and he's a good boxer as well. So I think that's a great.
It wasn't
matchup.
A slight on Frank Martin at all. I was just doing some. I was just trying to in one concise couple sentences.
Where's he been? When's he coming back?
That's another thing too. It's like, it's, you know, I don't know what happens to some of these guys after a big fight. They kind of disappear. That's why I really like Jaime Munguia.
After my first loss and I got the bag, I fought like 4 months later against Amir Khan. Like I came right back. I don't understand these guys when they lose and they make a bunch of money and then they just disappear.
I don't know if it's the promoter issue. I don't know what's going on with that, but like you got to come back. And that's why I really like what Jaime Munguia is doing. He just
announced
another fight.
Yep.
This December, he's squeezing in a fourth fight this year. Four fights.
So cool.
He fought John Ryder. He fought Canelo. He got millions of dollars to fight Canelo. He fought again recently, I think September, and now he's fighting in December. That's how you get better. That's how you stay. That's how you maximize your earning capabilities. That's how you stay in the public eye of boxing fans. It's really easy to be forgotten about in boxing because there's no schedule. There's no way for you to stay in the news unless you're Ryan Garcia and you do crazy stuff. That's the only way you could possibly stay in the news in boxing is to act up. But with Keyshawn and this next fight, like I'm not saying a Keyshawn versus Gervonta Davis fight is like next up, but like let's get excited here that we have ourselves a viable guy. Like how many times have we seen some of these guys get knocked off, like in big fights getting blown up in smoke, like Tim Zoo.
But also,
recently.
Dan, like nobody wants to fight Davis. we got Lomachenko not just literally being like, nah, I'm good. I don't want to fight him. We got these guys that now, like you said, we have a guy actually chasing Gervonta, not the other way around. So
yeah, that's, I like it.
Why not like that?
Really good point, Chris. And I like that he's using the Ryan Garcia textbook here by just putting pressure on Gervonta I don't think he's going to stop either. Thing with Keyshawn is that he is very well spoken. He's not afraid of the cameras. He's got Top Rank behind him full bore. I would say if there was like a power rankings of importance at Top Rank, he's way at the top right now. Especially going forward, especially with how Teofimo's in litigation, Tyson Fury is on the way out. Terrence Crawford is gone. Shakur Stevenson is gone. Keyshawn Davis might be number one. He might be the most important fighter on the Top Rank roster right now.
Did you hear what Bob said prior to the fight? He said, this is our next superstar. Like when Bob says that, dude, that's a big, when I read that before this fight, I was like, wow, Bob's going out on a limb here. Cause I thought this was going to be a tough fight. And I was like, wow, Bob's really calling this guy out like that. Because listen, when Bob speaks, man, you listen, and it carries a lot of weight. When Bob calls you the next Top Rank superstar, it's happening, dude.
This is the guy that they're going to put all their resources in for the next couple of years. And don't tell me that the fight can't be made. PBC and Top Rank were working together to make the Lomachenko and Gervonta Davis fight. I know it's different set of like different standards, I guess, or a different situation. Because Lomachenko's near the end, and I think Top Rank is more willing to cash out on him against Gervonta. But they have talked, and they have gotten close to an agreement. They've made agreements before. We don't know exactly what's going on with ESPN and Top Rank for their future, so I would not be shocked. I'm just excited that there's another name out there that
in a very
Trump
deep division
can get in. Yeah, the WBO route for Keyshawn is interesting because he's ranked third in the WBO. Raymond Murataya is ranked right above him. And that's going to be interesting because the champion is Dennis Baranchuk. So what's going to happen between Murataya and Keyshawn? Like, I don't see Bob Arum saying Raymond Murataya is the future of Top Rank. I don't see him getting this type of hometown exposure. I don't see him getting these type of chances. So I think what we're going to see, Chris, is Keyshawn Davis potentially fight Dennis Baranchuk. That would make the most sense, and I absolutely hope that happens. Because then fans, you know, a lot of fans were like, can you win a title first, Dan, before you're coordinating this guy? I was like, okay, like, I know what I could see with my eyes with Keyshawn looking great. Yeah, he will get the Baranchuk fight, and he will beat him. And then what? Then you can't deny this guy because he's got a belt.
Yeah, I originally thought, again, this is all prior to this what happened this weekend. I thought Muay Thai was going to get the Brancheck fight. He's got more fights. He's, like you said, he's higher in the BO. I think the kid's been waiting and deserves it. And I think Muay Thai beats Brancheck as well. I think he's younger, he's bigger, he's looking really sharp lately. And then Keyshawn gets the first defense against Muay Thai. And you get a nice young championship fight. But I think you're right. It does seem like they're going to fast track Keyshawn and push him right to the Brancheck fight first. And then maybe his first defense could be Muay Thai. Maybe they go right for Davis. I don't know. But I think it would be good business, I think, for Top Rank to get another one of their guys that in Muay Thai to get a title. So take that belt off Brancheck, get that win. And then it ups his value. It ups his sticker. And then he fights Keyshawn. But we got to see what they're going to do, because they can do it. It can do it either way. But regardless, I think Brancheck is the mark of the division. Muay Thai, these young guys that's the guy they want. And he's going to be a chip for Top Rank to get their guy's title.
Brancheck beating Never, I think, just set up so many.
What a wrench.
That messed so many things up within the plans for Top Rank. That's the beauty of
Brancheck. Brancheck's nickname should be Banana Peel.
He messed it all up. He sent massive headaches through that Top Rank office. We'll see what happens.
He's a pretty good fighter too. We're not knocking him. Like, he's actually pretty good. He's a scrappy, tough style to deal with. He's just in a really, really deep division.
Yeah, and I haven't heard his name. Like, he's just like, he's not coming up in any discussions. He's not coming up in any rumors.
They will, because the BO is not going to sit there and let that money sit out there. He's got to make defenses. He's got to be in these fights. They got to get paid.
And also, like, the WBO is very much in line with Top Rank. Like, mm-hmm. Baba makes some calls.
You said they were 2-3, Muay Thai and Keyshawn.
Yeah.
I mean, I beat a top three guy to earn my title shot. So you got to remember, it's not necessarily just the guy who's number two or number one or whatever.
Right. They look at that and they kind of figure out who should get the shot. Either way, we're going to have some fun fights at 135. Abdullah Mason, did you watch this?
Oof.
Oh, my God.
Oof.
This was like low-key fight of the year, low-key round of the year. Like, holy crap. He gets dropped twice. He drops his opponent with an unbelievable hook that I can't stop watching about how his opponent fell. His opponent had a crazy haircut, too. That was just a lot of action packed into 2.5 rounds. Mason ultimately gets the win. A lot of questions came out of this. Questions that we didn't think we were going to have to ask after this type of fight. I thought he was going to walk through them. But, I mean, his chin, I don't know what his chin is, but I'll tell you what, he got up, it didn't faze him, and he took his guy out. But are you going to question Abdullah Mason's chin now?
Yeah, we do. And that's just the nature of this sport. But I will say this from a boxer standpoint, it didn't change his approach. It didn't deter him from throwing that uppercut from the outside. It didn't deter him to try and knock the guy out. He got clipped a couple times. He got rocked even when he didn't go down a few times. But he was trying to get that guy out of there. And I respect the hell out of that. Yeah, his chin got checked a little bit. Yeah, you know, he went down. But he got up and he acted like a champion's supposed to act. So you can see some negatives here, but I see some positives as well.
We don't know what this guy's going to be. Like, we only know the hype. We only see what we can see with our eyes. Like, he's very skilled. He's got power. He's got that killer instinct. He's got everything. He's got pedigree, amateur status, big-time promoter behind him. That's all checks out. But we have to see in the ring is, like, that's the beauty of the sport. It's like, we're going to figure some stuff out. So is he going to potentially be a Felix Trinidad type of guy where he's in firefights, like, his chin gets checked, he goes down, he gets up?
Mm-hmm.
Or is he going to be some guy that we just, oh, my, this is like an aberration where he gets hit once? Like, I'm very curious to see, because we don't know.
Well, remember De La Hoya? He got dropped a lot early in his career. First round, usually got, you know, it happened multiple times on his way up. And no one ever brings that up. De La Hoya has a fantastic chin. He's got one of the best chins, you know, in recent years. So it's not a huge knock. People are going to look at it like that, because when you got a guy who looks, he's under the microscope because he looks so goddamn good. There's going to be people saying that, of course. But it's historically, we've had plenty of fantastic fighters that have come up and got dropped early on in their career. It's part of the game, man. This is professional boxing, man. They're not playing. They're not playing pity pat in there. And that dude he's a good fighter. Did you call the fight with him and Ertenbout in Sony Hall?
Yes. I knew that looked familiar.
Yes. So we've had Ertenbout on our air. He's excellent, absolutely excellent. Was he dominating that whole fight and then stopped them late? Or was it like a scrap?
It was a scrap. Like, Erwin Bat, like, you've seen him fight. Like, he can get himself into some tricky situations, but that guy's game. Like, that guy, I kind of look familiar. I
called his fight with Charlie Suarez, and I was impressed. And Charlie Suarez just had that huge KO a couple weeks ago. But yeah, him and Johan actually had a really tough fight. Charlie, you know, won pretty handily, but it was a very, very tough, scrappy fight. That guy can fight. Unreal. So that was a big step up for Abdullah.
He gets the win. We're going to keep our eye on him. It's a Saturday night match room. We'll start with Bam Rodriguez. Good gracious. Oof. Bam Rodriguez.
Special.
This kid is... We're watching greatness. You're watching greatness when Bam Rodriguez steps into the ring at 24 years old, taking out big-time names in the sport, taking out guys that have never been stopped and doing it in brutal fashion. This time it's Pedro Guerrera, who had never been stopped in close to 50 professional fights. Bam takes him out inside of 3 rounds. Amazing footwork, just always in the right spot, so technically sound, power, pressure, aggression, angles. I mean, he's must-watch TV. Bam Rodriguez is top 5 pound for pound, and we're looking at a kid that just can't be stopped right now.
He's so goddamn special. Like you said it best, Dan. We're watching greatness. We're watching greatness develop. We're watching greatness evolve. The kid stays so focused. I said this in one of our past shows. He's a very serious young man, and you see in the way that he approaches and why he's getting better. How is that possible? This kid's getting better. Like, he's getting better all the time. Those moves he was doing that night, I posted it on my story. You know, he cuts this angle and then it looks like it's going to be a looping shot, and it's really short uppercut with the lead hand. Like, I mean, it was a 6-inch punch. Guy didn't see it. Goes down. Like, everything he does. And not only is he technically perfect, his hands are always in great position. It's fun. He goes out there and does cool things. He knocks guys out. He's trying to hurt you. I don't have enough positive remarks for Bam Rodriguez. He's quickly becoming my favorite fighter in the world.
I mean, he's doing things that he's doing a little bit of everything. You know,
everything.
He's taking out these names, which is just really impressive. And I don't want to hear it anymore about they're all this, that, and the other. He's taking them out in just spectacular fashion. So he's got the resume already at age 24. It's not like we're watching him take on, you know, the Pedro Guerreras of the world, who are fringe contender champions and guys that the common folk will, or hardcore fan won't even know about. And we're like, all right, when's Bam going to step up? His biggest fights might be in his rearview mirror. Hopefully it's not, but like, he's 24 and he's taking out these huge names. I mean, he has that going for him. And like you said, inside the ring, he's so technically sound and he does stuff in there that you just don't see in any other fighters right now. So he's got that going for him, and he's fun. It's a little bit of everything when you're watching this guy. The only knock is that he's not a welterweight, or he's not like one of these traditional weight classes where, you know, we're not going to see him in there with the biggest of names, but they're really pushing that Inoue fight, and they're really pushing that Chocolatito fight. I mean, they were pushing it hard all week long. They were talking about Inoue, and Bam is like, I don't know if it's going to happen anytime soon, but I think it will happen one day. They're just too far separated by in weight right now. But yeah, the Chocolatito fight is something that was brought up a lot. Like, they didn't one name they didn't say, Chris, on Saturday night in the post fight, was Junto Nakatani, who is at 115, or 118, excuse me. So Bam would have to go up to 118. It was a lot of unification, where I want the winner of Ioka or Fernando Martinez, who are fighting on New Year's Eve in a rematch. Bam said, if I can't get that, then yeah, I'll look for Chocolatito. 37-year-old Chocolatito versus Bam right now, I don't think it's going to be a good night for Chocolatito.
No, I think that's going to be the next move, though. I think you're going to round out him knocking off all the kings, the legend slayer, Bam Rodriguez. That's the last one on the docket. And it'll be Chocolatito's last payday too. You know, it'll be a nice hunk.
Saudi.
Nice hunk of cash. And he can go out with a great fight and a great fighter. But yeah, that's a rough night for Chocolatito. I think he makes it fun though. I think it'll be fun in the beginning. He throws so many punches, but once Bam, you know, gets churning and gets going, that's I got Bam all day. But I think that is going to be the next fight. I think we're going to see that.
Yeah, Hearn said in the post fight, there was a lot to take away from it. Hearn said, you know, my Turki Al-Sheikh, he wants the best fighters in the world to come to Saudi. well, I think it's time for Bam to head over to Saudi Arabia. So therefore, like, what does that mean? Like, a Chocolatito versus Bam fight in Saudi. Yeah, that's probably the next move.
And Dan, you know what's funny about Bam? He doesn't care about the paydays. He just wants to fight.
I'm sure he's not going to mind that extra couple zeros, those extra zeros on the paycheck. I want to see him in the unification. I want to see him unify. Ayoka and Fernando Martinez are two worthy fighters. A little bit on the younger side, younger than Chocolatito, younger than Guevara, younger than some of the other scalps that Bam has. I think they will explore that, and if that doesn't happen, then they will pivot to Chocolatito. Did not mention Nakatani because I think he's on a different path. I think it's more likely we see Nakatani in Inoue next year or the next 18 months. But I'll tell you what, just like we talked about with Keyshawn and having a viable the name for Tank. Tank's the man at 135, right? Well, the man right now is Inoue in these lower weights, and there's an orbit around him, and Bam Rodriguez is in that orbit. Nakatani is in that orbit. That's fun. You can dream there. So enough with the Inoue versus Gervonta. That's never going to happen. Bam Inoue, I think, should be like the it's not on the same scale as Gervonta, but that should be kind of like the unrealistic, maybe it could happen type of fight.
Yeah, I agree. I think there's a reason that we're not hearing the Nakatani Bam talk. I think that they're really pushing for that Inoue fight, which I am too. I think that's the fight I want more than any other in the world of
Inoue Nakatani, right?
Inoue Nakatani, yes. And I think Bam, I don't think there's any rush. You know, the guy's at 115. Like you said, I think him and Inoue just doesn't. That's not really going to happen. It's going to be two. What's the saying? Two ships passing each other in the night.
Two ships passing in the night.
Yeah.
Two ships passing in the night.
It's not going to happen. Just timing wise, weight wise, points of their career wise. But we could see Nakatani and Bam down the line, even though it's not being discussed now. That might be the only fight worth making at some point in the next couple of years if these guys do what it seems like they're going to do. So it's interesting to have so many good fighters in these weight divisions. You know, we're talking about flyweights. This is awesome. Like, it's great.
Yeah, and I think Bam being so young is like he will be more likely to climb weights. We've seen him do it before, so he could fight at 122. He could fight.
He's just a little guy though. He's not like there's only so far you can go in terms of putting muscle on frame. You know, putting weight on. He's just not a big guy. Yes, we've seen him jump up and then go back down and then move up again. Like, he can do that because he's that talented, but he's got a ceiling. Like, Nakatani's tall and long. You know, he has a frame you can add weight to. Bam, not so much. Like, we're not going to see Bam at 126. We're not going to see Bam at...
Like, 122 might be his...
That'd probably be his cap.
Right, and then Nakatani, he can go to 126 because he's so tall.
Oh, yeah.
And then Inoue is going to go to 126.
Even that, I think that's Inoue's cap too, is 26. Because he's not a big guy either. You met him. He's not a big guy. There's only so much meat you can put on. You can put on that frame to where it's going to be actually beneficial. So I think his cap is 26. Nakatani, we could even see maybe even higher. Because he's long and tall. Mm-hmm. And he cracked.
Ray Ford, in his debut at 130 pounds, looked really good. Got the early knockdown, dominated his opponent, just looked way more comfortable at 130. Immediately steps right in there 130, I think, and should a division that's kind of weak. Like, I really want to see Ray Ford versus Shaki Foster. I want to see that like right away. I think Ray Ford did a really good job of capturing the fans' attention with these knockdowns, and we're looking for someone at 130 to kind of come in there and be a player. Well, like, I think Ray Ford did that on Saturday night.
I agree. And I think I've been watching the evolution of Ray Ford. I believe I might have called his pro debut, but I called a lot of his early fights on Matchroom. And his development and his evolution has been very, very impressive. And I think he's one of those guys where they say when you win a world title, you get 30% better. I think we're seeing that real time with him. You know, we've had Orlando Chapo Gonzalez on our air, on Pro Box. He said he'd made a bit of a name for himself putting on incredible fights. So he's a tough guy, and Ray dominated him, drops him, wins every round. It's an impressive statement, you know. I agree with you. I think at 130, I think he can go right into the mix.
Yes, that's where that was the undercard to the main event. Boots versus Karen. I have to issue an apology to Karen. I'm sorry, man. You came back. You went into the drawing board. You went into the lab. You shaved your head. You came out scarier. And you took it to Boots Ennis. You landed 173 punches, the most ever on a Boots opponent. You only landed 90 in the first fight. Boots gets the win. It was dominant at times. It was sloppy at times. Defensive miscues from Boots. A really strange post-fight interview. Doesn't get him out of there. I thought his corner was pretty awful on Saturday night. His dad just shouting, get him out of there, 12 times every round. What did you take from Boots' fight? I thought it was good, but like he was going to get graded with a pretty harsh curve here because people were expecting him to take out Karen in this meaningless rematch, we thought.
Poor performance. Got hit way too much. And that's two fights back-to-back where he got hit too much. Karen Chukadzian, I tip my hat, Chukadzian, I got a fight. He's very, very strong. He's very durable. He's very rough. I think he gives a lot of these guys in this weight class trouble. He was very, determined in this fight, and you saw that. He was in there. Made it ugly. You know, a lot of tie-ups, a lot of grabbing. But listen, it takes two to hold. Boots was doing it too. They took a point from Karen late, but if you watch those last two rounds, Boots was holding as well. So it wasn't just one guy. So definitely impressive performance from Karen, poor performance from Boots. And I'm going to go with what he said in the post-fight interview. It's time for him to move up. He's hurting himself to make weight. I was looking at the videos and the pictures of him this week making weight. He looked rough. You can just see the extra, he's a big guy. I told you, I met him in Atlanta and I shook his hand. He is a big, big welterweight and he's solid as a rock. So for him, I'm looking at him fight week. I'm seeing his flanks. Everything was pulled in. I've seen his face. I could just tell how tight he was trying to make that weight. And he's a super disciplined guy, obviously. But I think he's hurting himself to stay at 47, which is unfortunate because he lost so many years not getting the fights that he wanted there. But listen, he's a world champion at 147. Go up to 54.
Yeah, let's get to that post-fight interview, which I thought was really weird. Away, he says, I got to go to... He's not... First off, he's not the best interview. He doesn't like to talk. He's a little... That's not the gift.
I see a little like anxiety in him, right? Do you get that? Like he's got a speaking anxiety, it seems like.
Yeah, I interviewed him before and it's brutal. Like you're pulling teeth and you're just like, oh, man, I wish this guy could just put like a little more effort in. Some guys, like you said, there is an anxiety there. They just don't feel comfortable. Like he probably, his comfortability is fighting, and he lets that. That's why he has Eddie Hearn with him to be his mouthpiece. But you got to interview the fighter afterwards, get his thoughts, and he just his body language was poor because he just seemed like he knew that wasn't a good performance. His right. First words out of his mouth.
He's also tired. He looked tired. He was drained.
He gassed. Yeah. The first thing he says is, "I'm going to 154." I think it's time for me to go 154. Unprovoked. It wasn't like Matt asked him. I thought that was strange. I'm 27, 20 years old.
And then he kind of pulled back on that, right? Didn't he pull back later and say that he's going to get some other titles?
He was all over the place. So he goes from saying, I'm going to be 154. I'm 27, 20 years old. I'm not young anymore. Then said, sometimes it's hard to get up for these lower tier opponents. Okay, well, this lower tier opponent pieced you up, bro.
Yeah.
Landed close to 200 punches on you. So you're admitting that like you don't get up for these names, but these names kind of like took it to you in this fight, and that's not a good look. Like you're an elite fighters don't get pushed around like that. Elite fighters don't get hit that much. I just think that we're like the invincibility of Boots is long gone. Like 2019, 2020, early 2021, he was the boogeyman. He was scary. He had power. He was knocking guys out. He was taking guys out in 5-6 rounds. He looked like the second coming of Roy Jones inside that ring. That's gone because I do think he's sticking around too long. Another thing, too, Chris, is the IBF rehydration clause. It's pretty strict, and that's 10 pounds. I'm sure he wants to go a little higher than that inside of there on fight day.
I hate that rule, by the way. I hate that rule. It's an absolute number. How does that make sense? It's plus 10 pounds for the IBF. Doesn't matter if you're a 122-pounder or 175-pounder. Everybody gets 10 pounds. It should be a percentage. It cannot be an absolute number. It is a nonsense rule, and you're hurting these guys more than helping.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more, especially what we learned earlier in this episode about what's the percentage makes way more sense. And I'm shocked that the IBF has that or hasn't adjusted that yet. Yeah, that post-fight was weird. His dad, I thought his corner really didn't do him any favors all fight long. No. His dad was literally shouting, "Get him out of there, son. Get him out of there." Every round for 12 rounds. "All right, somebody, get him out of there." And he did drop him in the fifth, and there was like seventh or eighth round where Boots, he was just like, he looked so determined to get the stoppage. He was like walking through shots. And it looked like, I was like, "All right, guys, everyone, look, this is me going for the knockout." And Karen is too tough. He's too cagey. He's too slippery. Guy's got a chin. He's got a great right hand. I would like to see him fight more out there. But this is about Boots Ennis and what he should do. And obviously, it's been chronicled numerous times and heavily that Boots is staying at 147 to make unification fights with some of the other champions. Why? Like, what does this do for your legacy? Like, okay, you beat Stanionis, who was elevated to champion. Good, great. You beat Brian Norman, who was elevated to champion. Great. You beat Mario Barrios, who I also believe was elevated to champion at 147. You beat any of those guys, or you beat all three of them, you become undisputed at 147. That's great. Or go to 154, where there's some real names and some real legacy-defining fights, like a Virgil Ortiz, I think, is a toss-up type of fight. Why are you staying at 147? Like, it's not like there's some name there that you like, Crawford or Spence or some of these the welterweights of yesteryear. So what's keeping you? Why do you have to fight at 147 against a talent pool that is not that impressive?
I was one of those guys saying stay at 47 and unify, because I think historically, I think it's important. We live in an era of unification, and unifying is a big deal, dude. And I think that, you know, Boots has the ability to unify the division, but if you can't make the weight, you can't do it, man. Because it's hurting his performances, obviously. And listen, he goes out there and he puts up a performance like that against a guy like Mario Barrios, he might lose. You know, Mario Barrios can fight. He's got a good jab. He's a tall guy. He's physical as well. So
Brian Norman's pretty big. I'm not saying Brian Norman's as skilled as him, but Brian Norman's a big guy too, an athletic guy.
Yeah, yeah. These guys are big and athletic. And so I was one of the guys arguing that he should stay at 47 and get those fights going. And that's, you know, one of the ways to become a star is to beat everybody in the division. Even if there's no other star power guys there, getting all those belts matters. And then you move up. It's like, all right, now we got this former undisputed welterweight now is coming into 154 with all these big names. But yeah, man, this honestly, this is an interesting turn of events. This, depending on what happens with Boots at 154, because it's such a deep division, even for someone as good as him, I don't know if he beats all those guys. You know, this could be like a cautionary tale. You know, something we talk about later. Like, yeah, he was one of the best guys we ever saw, but he just couldn't really fit in. You know, like he was kind of a tweener. You know, it's going to be really interesting to see how he handles 54, because he, like I said, these last two fights, he gets hit too much. You can't do that with the... You cannot do that with these 54-pounders. These guys are going to hurt you.
Yeah. Just to go back a little bit to the undisputed stuff. Like, I know you believe in how you become undisputed. Like, if you went and you went one by one and you won all the belts, that's
collecting heads.
Obviously way more impressive than coming in and fighting a
doing
guy.
Doing a George Kambosos.
Yeah, fighting, you know, a guy that has three belts, you have one, or a guy that has all the belts, you have one, you win, you become undisputed. But in this case for Boots, like, I don't think that there's a lot to prove. Yes, he would get – first of all, the first belt he has is not – he didn't beat Terrence Crawford to get it. He was – the IBF gave it to him. So from here on out, he's going to fight guys at 147 that aren't big names, guys at 147 that were also handed belts. So, yeah, he becomes undisputed, Chris, and it could take years to do that. Like, win those three fights, years we're talking about. And at a weight that he can't – is not comfortable at, and he's 27. So he becomes undisputed at 147 at age 30 or 31. Then what? then you go to 147. I understand the sentiment is great. Yeah. And I believe in that sentiment. But it's not like he didn't exhaust every option. He tried. His promoters, past promoters have tried. With current promoters have tried. It's time to go to 154. Like we talked about this last week. The fans are going to be excited for you to go there. It's refreshing. This last fight was, it didn't look fun for him in there. He, look at that post-fight interview. That was not, look at Keyshawn Davis's post-fight interview and a hometown win. And look at Jaron Ennis's post-fight interview and a hometown win. Like, those are two different stories.
And also the Bam Rodriguez. Like, I think everyone was looking at Jaron to put up the kind of performance that Bam did. He goes out there. He's got an overmatched opponent. You're gonna crush this guy. Gets him out of there in 2-3 rounds. I think people were expecting that. And I mean, Jaron and his team, I think they put that on themselves too, to go out there and get that guy out of there. Like, that was the thing they needed to do. Which
almost did.
Almost did. I looked, you know, the power's there, but he had a really tough guy in front of him, but definitely underperformed. And Dan, you made a lot of good points about, you know, maintaining and trying to go for the unification. It just doesn't seem like it's in the cards. This guy is a victim of circumstance. How many years did we hear him yelling, screaming for the Raptors for these fights, for the Spence fight, for the Crawford
fight? 4 years.
And he got put, and he's kept out of those big name fights and couldn't get any other fights either. So unfortunate turn of events for him. Someone who's so talented, he lost his prime years. You know, it sucks.
And now he's with Eddie Hearn, who's obviously super aligned with Saudi Arabia, and they're talking about 5-on-5s. You know, De La Hoya and Hearn are going at it on social media, 5-on-5, 5-on-5, this, that, and the other. And there's the Virgil Ortiz fight at 154 that I think could be made with Saudi's help. I think they want to make that fight.
What a fight.
Boots versus it's just an unbelievable fight. Virgil Ortiz versus Boots Ennis at 154 is a 50-50 fight. Two fighters with vulnerabilities, two fighters with power. I have to see it. I have to see it next.
I agree. And I wanted to see it at 47. And at 54, I think I like it even better. You know, like, they're both going to be a little bit healthier. They're not going to be killing themselves to make it 147. They both struggle to make 47. Both guys will be healthier. They'll put on a better performance. And I don't know. I always leaned Boots. I don't know if I do anymore. I don't know. I'm really high on Virgil, and I have been for a very long time. He was my favorite guy at 47, but I thought Boots would beat him. I thought he was just too dynamic. He was just too athletic. But I don't know now. Again, I don't like these young fighters getting hit so clean, Dan. I always say
Virgil gets hit too.
He does, not but like, he's got good hand position. You know, he doesn't get hit with the same shit over and over though. With Boots, we saw that, getting hit with the same things over and over again. Defense is what separates the guys in this sport at any level. Everybody can punch. Everybody's got skills. Everybody's got their shot. Everybody's got their abilities. But the highest level guys are the guys that don't get hit.
Right. That's what makes you elite in my mind. And that's like Terrence Crawford barely got touched. You think of him as a knockout artist, but you don't realize he gets hit with like 20%. Like, look at the top five in pound for pound. These are guys, I mean, that
it's always,
are very
it's always guys with great defense.
Not only that, it's like, even if they, like, they don't have great defensive numbers, or they're not exactly known for being defensive-minded, like, in a way. Like, you don't see him get pushed around. Like, Boots, there was nothing about that performance that was like, wow, this is a top five, like, elite guy. Like Hearn was saying all week long, this is the future pound-for-pound number one. Jury's still out. I mean, he could do that. He can come back, beat Virgil Ortiz. He can come and beat a bunch of guys at 154. And we're looking at Boots as the pound-for-pound king. It still could happen, but he's got to make some serious adjustments, because you can't live and die with getting tagged that much.
No. And I think, that's the thing, you can live and you will die doing that in this sport. Not literally, figuratively.
You won't live long.
Yeah, you're going to go out on your shield. You know, it's going to be exciting, but I think especially at 54, I don't think he can be taking those shots. Also, Dan, something I brought up on I don't know if it was one of our shows, but 47 to 54 is an interesting transition. The gloves change. That's the only weight class where the glove changes. So now you've got, at 147, you wear 8-ounce gloves, guys at home who are listening. That's the largest framed person, the heaviest weight to wear the smallest gloves in the sport. So you're 147 pounds, you wear 8-ounce gloves. At 54, everything over 147, you wear 10-ounce gloves. So that's the first weight class where you wear 10-ounce gloves, the smallest weight class with the biggest gloves. So that's an interesting caveat for that particular transition from 47 to 54. So I'm curious how that's going to affect Boots as well, too. Because, you know, you saw him hitting Chukotsky and he hurt him. Couldn't finish him, couldn't knock him out. What's going to happen at 54?
Yeah, he might be an accumulator there.
Might have to box more. We saw Virgil Ortiz has to box more. He's not blowing guys out at 47. He's got to box now. Yeah, it's a interesting weight class.
It's the weight class right now outside of heavyweight. That's where so many young guys. You're gonna see Spence there. Boots needs to get there. I mean, you did everything you did at 147. Your body's at its limit. There's no more people to fight. Go to 154. Even like take like an introductory fight there. It doesn't have to, you don't have to jump right to Virgil. Just fight at 154, get used to that weight, and then put this behind you. This 24 rounds with Karen, which is interesting because boxing's so funny, man. Like, how many big fights in the last 20 years did we not get? We're getting a lot of big fights now, the last two years. But for years, we went without seeing some of the biggest fights possibly get made. But we've seen 24 rounds of Boots Ennis and Karen Chukwuemeka.
Yeah, we're gonna put that one in the rear view. We're gonna put that one. We're gonna put that in the past, a distant memory.
Ryan Garcia got in the mix. He said, "I will knock Boots out."
Well, again, we're talking about a guy who's getting hit, and Ryan can do anything. He can punch, and he can punch. So, defense matters.
Chuck, Karen was landing that left hook at will.
Yep.
I don't know if Boots would fight Ryan Garcia the same way. I think Boots did get hit a lot on Saturday night because he was going for the knockout. He was staying in the pocket a little bit longer. Karen isn't a hard puncher. He's an accurate puncher. He's a respectable power. So maybe he fights like a Ryan Garcia different and stays away from that left
Tank
hook.
Tank said it in interviews where he was talking about Ryan. He was worried about Ryan. He was worried about Ryan's power. He said, he's like, I'm watching this video, this guy knocking people out and blah, blah, blah. And you can see the way that Tank fought in that fight. He fought very, very smart and he boxed. Mm. So, yeah, I would agree. I would think that Boots would not go out there and do what Devin Haney did and try and fight, you know, Ryan and throw left, trade left hooks with him.
Yeah. Clyde the champ, the dog, is barking, which means the podcast is over. That's how it works.
He's the boss. He's the boss around here.
He is the boss of bosses. I am headed out to Dallas, Texas.
My man.
Mike Tyson versus Jake Paul. Amanda Serrano versus Katie Taylor. Mario Barrios on the card. Bruce Carrington on the card.
Who's Barrios fighting?
Ramos. Jesus Ramos.
Not Abel Ramos.
The older one. I mixed them up. I should probably know. The uncle.
The one with more losses.
Yes.
For the title.
Yes. No, I believe so. I don't. Yeah, that fight was added on.
Yeah, not a great fight. Not a great fight.
It's better than some other fight. Like, I was not expecting Mario Barrios, a welterweight title fight, to be on this card.
Yeah.
And true. It is. It's all about Mike Tyson. I watched the Netflix and Jake Paul. It's all about those two.
I gotta watch that. I didn't watch it yet.
Yeah, the first episode's really good because it's just Mike. We know so much about Mike Tyson. I know his every part of his life, I know, and you do too. Yet I was hooked on his parts of that 24/7 where he's going through Brownsville, Brooklyn. He's talking about his pigeons. Still captivates me. Like, this guy's one of the most compelling humans ever, and he's stepping in the ring at Jerry World. I will be on the broadcast for DraftKings, giving you some betting options and taking you through the odds. I have two live hits prepared. I'm very excited. Nice. I have a nice suit prepared, Chris. No
gotta
pressure.
Look good. Look good, no feel pressure, good, Dan. Call good. That's how it goes. Exactly.
No pressure. It's only going out to 150 countries. It's probably going to be seen by like 100 million people worldwide. I just hope I come through for us, for the show.
You will. I'm excited. I'll be watching. Me and Paulie will be watching. We're doing a watch along for ProBox TV. So Friday night we'll be sitting in the comfy leather chairs watching a fight. Where we say, "Oh, there's Dan." Yeah, so we'll be shouting you out on ProBox.
Awesome. We're gonna do we'll do a show from there Thursday morning and give you some final thoughts on that fight and
I'm interested. I'm interested to pick your brain being around Tyson.
Yeah.
And these guys.
I'm landing Tuesday night. I'm doing some live shows for MVP's YouTube page on Wednesday and Thursday. And then we'll have our episode coming to you live from Dallas, Texas. And then we'll preview this 5-on-5 Latino night over in Riyadh, which features Billiam Smith for Zerto and some other pretty good fights as well. All right, everybody. Hope you enjoyed the episode. Hope you had a good weekend. Let's look forward to a great week. Mike Tyson, Jake Paul fight week. Oh, my goodness.
Spring break isn't what it used to be. It's better. This spring, stay 3 nights and get a $50 Best Western gift card. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Visit bestwestern.com for complete terms and conditions.